Chapter 2. The Crack in Everything. One of the major obstacles to communicating what belief feels like is that I'm not working with a blank slate. Our culture is smudged over with half-legible religious scribbling. The vocabulary that used to describe religious emotions hasn't gone away or sunk into an obscurity from which you could carefully reintroduce it, giving a little explanation as each unfamiliar, new-stroke-old term emerged. Instead, it's still in circulation, but repurposed, with new meanings generated by new usages. Meanings that make people think that they know what believers are talking about when they really, really don't. Case in point, the word sin, that well-known contemporary brand name for ice cream and high-end chocolate truffles, and lingerie in which the colour red predominates, and sex toys, and cocktails. There's a brand management agency in Australia called Sin. There's a fish restaurant in Lima, Peru, called Los Pescadores Capitales, which is a Spanish-language pun on the similarity between the words for sinning and for fishing. An English equivalent would be calling it the Seven Deadly Fins. They used, God help us, to be a seaside panto for adults starring Jim Davidson, which went by the name of Cinderella. Taxes on cigarettes and booze are sin taxes. Sin City, in Frank Miller's comic book and the movie adaptation of it, is a locale where the population are entirely occupied in lap dancing and extreme violence. Keep piling up the examples and a picture emerges, meaning congealing from a pointillist cloud. It isn't tidy, this definition by use, and the cloud of meaning clearly has a light end, truffles, and a noir end, Frank Miller, but it's entirely comprehensible all the same. Sin, you can see, always refers to the pleasurable consumption of something. Also, it always preserves some connection to sex, which is why it would seem creepy for it ever to appear in the branding of a product aimed at children. And sometimes the sex is literal, but usually it's been disembodied, reduced to a mere tinge of the atmosphere of desire, and transferred from sex itself to another bodily satisfaction, to eating, or drinking, or smoking, or greedy looking, all of which are easier to put on sale in bulk quantities than sex itself. The other universal is that sin always encodes a memory of ancient condemnation, but a distant memory, a very faint and inexplicable memory, just enough of a memory to add a zing of conscious naughtiness to whatever the pleasure in question is. Whether the thing you're consuming is saturated fat spiked with mood-lifting theobromine, truffles again, or the spectacle of non-existent impulse control rendered in moody black and white, Frank Miller again, you kind of know you shouldn't, but not in a serious way. The pleasure comes from committing an offence against good nutrition or boring old good taste, which is too silly to worry about. Everybody knows, then, that sin basically means indulgence or enjoyable naughtiness. If you were worried, you'd use a different word or phrase. You'd talk about eating disorders or addictions. You'd go to another vocabulary cloud altogether. The result is that when you come across someone trying to use sin in its old sense, you may know perfectly well in theory that they must mean something which isn't principally chocolatey, and yet the modern mood music of the word is so insistent that it's hard to hear anything.